Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K-Wise Whitehead here again to talk with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we are having a very interesting and engaging conversation about technology and about the uses of technology and about us as parents making choices about how much technology we're exposing our children to. We're wondering whether or not the government should step in and regulate it. They're already talking about it. I mean, we know, to be very clear, when the government starts talking about it, it's usually because they're already doing it. I want to throw something out before I take your calls. And once we get through this calls and conversation, I do want to talk about Kavanaugh for the rest of the hour. But I saw a video when I was in my communication course, and the video was called My Magazine is an iPad That Doesn't Work. And what the video consisted of was a room, and there were young people in there, maybe 2 and 3 years old, and they all had magazines, and they gave them the magazines to check their reading readiness. There's an old study that was done about how you can tell whether a child is ready to read. You know, they have the book turned the right way, they're turning the pages in the right way, reading readiness. Well, they gave these 2, 3, and 4 year olds magazines, and one by one, they're trying to swipe the pages, they're poking the pages, waiting for something to happen. And then they started crying because the magazine is an iPad and it doesn't work. They took out the magazines, replaced them with iPads, and one by one, every child was so excited because now my iPad is working. Now the technology is talking to me, engaging me, focusing on me. And according to one of our callers from the University of Maryland, Jared, it's giving you that little shot of dopamine. Even as a baby, it's making you feel good. Well, maybe we should regulate it. We have a couple more calls on this technology topic. We have Dean on. Dean is from Harford County. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Dr. K.
Good afternoon.
I started out to call because what I'm about to discuss, it's in my family. It happened in my family.
Yes, ma'am.
But my grandson was 5 years old at the time, and he went to spend a weekend with one of his little friends. So I'm going to try to really rush this.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
When my husband went to pick him up to bring him home, he told my husband, he said, Granddaddy, I watched the nasty.
5 years old, right, Dean?
Five years old.
Okay.
So my husband said to him, what do you mean you watched nasty? He said, I cover my eyes.
No.
Because anything that flip on that TV, if he's here,
right,
we cover his eyes because, you know, you can't turn the channel
right
that quick.
Right.
And another incident happened with my sister-in-law. She caught her 9-year-old watching pornography on his laptop.
Yep.
So, Dr. K, this is more serious than we can even fathom. Our children are being introduced to this at not 14, let's say 5, 9 years old. So I'm not a big government person, but something has to be done.
Wow, Dean.
Okay, and I just want to share that because
I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm so glad you did. I appreciate that. We have Clarence on the phone from Northwest Baltimore. Clarence, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Dr. K. Dr. K, us older folks like myself, we saw this a long time ago. We don't call it, we term it as an infection. The younger, us older folks, we're not quite as infected as the younger generation has become. You know, the most the government can do is, because the line between corporate power and profit is so blurred
right
in the United States, I can only see the government creating a technology cert in general and slapping a warning on the pack. That's as far as it's going to go.
Right.
Because they're not going to regulate anything that diminishes the sale or the advertising business. You get your booster shots through all of the apps that come in. People got apps, even kids. They got apps to go to 7-Eleven and everything
right
else.
Right.
So the infection is there, and the booster shots are all over the place. You know. And one more thing, Dr. K, you know, from us older technical guys like myself, one of the most dangerous devices as far as mental control and entrainment is an LED TV set. I will not own an LED TV set.
Okay, tell me about that. So an LED TV set, what exactly, how is that different from a regular television? Because I don't know. I don't have a television at home.
Well, the difference between, you know, a LED TV set and LCD TV set is you don't have all the little. An LED TV set essentially has all the little light bulbs that have the refresh rate that's faster than your, you know, it's pushing the envelope as far as the communication between what's on the screen
okay.
and your eyes. I won't go there. All my laptop is LCD, and my TV, the only TV in the house that's in the basement, is LCD, too. I will not
okay.
go near one of those things flashing that red, white, and blue. It's mainly the red, white, and blue that I'm so objectionable to.
Okay.
It's entrainment. But thank
okay.
you, Dr. K.
Thank you so much. So, folks, we're going to continue to watch this technology. We're going to continue to watch out for what's happening. If it holds true, they're going to be testing the device this week. It's going to show up almost like an Amber Alert on your phone, and you're going to have to push a button. But it's a way of testing whether or not the president's able to send. This is not a tweet, folks, to send a text message directly to the phones of every American. Those of us who own phones, you can't opt out. I checked with Verizon to try to opt out. They said it's above their head. Can't even opt out of it because it comes from above. We're going to keep checking into it and we'll keep you aware. For the rest of the time, I want to turn our attention to what is happening right now in Washington, D.C. We've got to talk about what's taking place with this potential Supreme Court justice with Brett Kavanaugh. I don't understand how we have gotten this far. For some of you of a certain age, you may remember when we had the same kind of thing happen. Does anybody out here other than me who's willing to age identify who might remember what happened with Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill? Remember how that was set up where they had Anita Hill at a table, had all the lights on her, so she was hot, she was sweating, or she was on one side of the room, television cameras in the middle, on the other side of the room, just a whole big panel of all white men questioning her about Clarence Thomas, his sexual harassment, his sexual assault. All of that was put on the table. I mean, it was riveting to sit there and listen to her recount in graphic detail what Clarence Thomas, who's now Supreme Court Justice Thomas, the things he would say to her, the things he would do to her, and it did not stop him from getting confirmed. Anita Hill, no one believed her outside of black women who supported her, and she has landed on her feet. She is a law professor, but Clarence Thomas, who definitely sexually harassed Anita Hill, went on to be promoted, went on to sit as he does now. And he's ineffective when you talk about justice for people of all different colors. He is ineffective in that role. He is not holding Thurgood Marshall's chair. He is just holding a chair because a Thurgood Marshall chair should come with some feeling of responsibility to the needs of others. He is not doing that. He was confirmed in the midst of that haze. And it was such a blow for women to know that we can speak up. We can name our accuser. We can recount in graphic detail what happened. And we were not believed. But it's a new day, folks. It's a new day. It's the day of hashtag Me Too. And thanks to Twitter and other forms of social media, you're not going to be able to get away with the things you got away with before. I want to talk about Judge Brett Kavanaugh and the woman who has accused him of sexual assault. Her name is Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. She said he sexually assaulted her at a party in the 1980s when they were both teenagers. In a letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, it was made public by CNN on Sunday. Dr. Ford, she's a research psychologist, she wrote, "Brett Kavanaugh physically and sexually assaulted me." She actually said that she wasn't even going to come forward and tell her story. But little by little, her story began to get out and she was losing control of her own story. They were naming her before she was ready to name herself. Kind of like what they did to Anita. Remember? Naming her before she was ready to name herself. So I want to have a conversation in this last half of the show. I want to have a conversation, folks. Thinking about the hashtag MeToo movement and the long arm of justice that Dr. King talked about, how long is too long before we can get justice? I mean, you're talking, this is the 1980s. Should she be seeking any type of justice now? or is time's up? Is there a period of time when you can bring these kind of cases? Or should they continue until they have been closed? Now, what happened on Twitter, a woman by the name of Jest Elizabeth, and she said she does not mean just as in she is something smaller than what she is. She says she's a just person. She put out this tweet, and it has gone viral. 83,000 likes, 19,000 retweets, and it started a new thread. Now, if you remember, hashtag MeToo was a thread with women all over the country and all over the world tweeting out and sharing their stories of sexual assault. You go back almost 2 years ago, back when Donald Trump was first on the scene, there was a woman from England who put out a hashtag that said, tweet your first assault. And you had women and girls all over this planet, hundreds of thousands of tweets of women and girls saying, I was sexually assaulted for the first time when I was 6 and when I was 12, and I'm never going to forget. And it did mark me. It scarred me. Well, here we are. Here's a third or so iteration of this. And this tweet is hashtag no Kavanaugh confirmation. Listen to the tweet from Jest Elizabeth. I am 61. I was raped when I was 17 by a man I knew. I was a virgin. I blamed myself for years. I was ashamed and embarrassed. I told no one for decades. It never goes away. And then woman after woman, people who seem to gender identify as women, somebody replied, I'm 61 too. I was sexually assaulted by a classmate at 17, raped at 19, beaten up at 22. Yeah, I'm not married. Hashtag me too. I know how you feel. It never goes away. But I'm glad to be talking about it with the hashtag me too women. Took over 44 years for that to happen. She said this is a sisterhood, a club that's bigger than they ever thought it would be. And then woman after woman tells her story. I'm 47. It happened when I was 9. I'm 72. It happened when I was 12. I'm 42. It happened when I was 13. And it's been going all day long. And this hashtag no Kavanaugh confirmation and hashtag believe Christina Blasey Ford. Believe her story. I want to talk about that. Should there be a time limit on hashtag me too? I mean, I know right now in our household, we have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old. You know I have my boys. We're talking to them, and I'm going to be very transparent here on the air today. We're talking to them more about hashtag Me Too than about race issues these days. Oh, yes, we are. Now, we talk and have talked all their life about what it means to grow up black and male in America, and how do you navigate, and how do you negotiate, and how do you find your way, and how do you stand up tall, and how do you survive what is happening and still be able to thrive. Like, we've done that their whole life. But when Me Too hit, it did shape our household. Like, we are drilling down deep with our boys about how no means no. And that consent is ongoing, enthusiastic consent all the way through. Because 30 years later, something you do today may pop up. Every step of the way, you have to be accountable for your actions. We want to raise our boys not to be caught up in toxic masculinity, not to see women as places where they can just, you know, plant their flag and claim the land. Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. We have Diane on the phone from Southeast Baltimore. Diane, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling. Hard topic.
I had to call on this topic. I waited to call on this topic. When you said you was going to switch over, I said, okay, let me. I think there should never be an exploration day.
Mm-hmm.
Because women, like you said, they bottle it up. They don't know who to talk to. And they keep it in for so long. And then when they do come forward, a lot of times the expiration to prosecute that person has expired.
Mm.
And I don't know if they can have their legal ramification, like, you know how they do with
right.
Trayvon Martin, where the
right.
family sued the person.
Right.
I don't know if women, but I had the same thing happen to me.
How old were you, Diane?
I'm going to say between 6 and 8 because I blanked it out. I talked to my psychiatrist years ago, and I told her, I said, I don't remember. And she said that I blanked it out. So it's between 6 and 8. I was in elementary school.
Now, let me ask you this, because I'm wondering, with the hashtag Me Too, and I think about myself, Diane. I think about the times that, you know, men have stood too close to me. That men, you know, sometimes have taken liberty on the subway, and they, you know, have their body parts right up against you.
Right.
And you're not sure how to move. You don't want to make a scene, but you know it doesn't feel comfortable. That when you name your accuser, when you name the abuser, it's not always about trying to take them to court. Sometimes you just need to have the courage to say their name.
Right. And my therapist was saying, write a letter to them, and you don't have to give it to them. She said you can bury it in your backyard, or even you can burn it up to let them not have a hold over you.
Right.
You know, and it does work. My situation was that, and then I got abused when I came back to live with my mom, and I mean, it just kept happening and happening. And so when I got attacked in my home, I was an adult at the time. I refused. And I, you know, she said, well, what you going to do? And I was reading a book. It's a book that freshmen have in college.
Right.
And it said, holler out loud.
Go somewhere
and just shout. And I did that. And I said, no, you're not going to win. This time you're not going to win. So she asked me, what would I do to this person that attacked me this last time? I said, I wish I had a 18-wheeler. I would run him over. Right. And I'm going to be very honest. I also told her if I had an M16, I would blow them away.
Wow.
And she knew what I meant. And, and I just released myself because I felt that's how angry I was.
I get it.
And I'm very stern on young girls and young boys because when they have Take Back the Night sometimes.
Right.
You know, you have boys. We don't talk about the boys that have been attacked. And
yes.
When I went to my first take back the night when they was at Mount Vernon, we had so many guys that came up and said, my mother put me out because of her boyfriend.
Wow.
She didn't believe me. She believed him. And I've been homeless all my life. So we don't know why our teenagers, that's why, you know, when I come on, I'm so passionate because it happened.
Right,
and
it
I
does.
Know that it can happen, and it makes you freeze, and you won't tell nobody.
Right.
And you live with it. It's like you're walking with you alive, but you really not.
Right. No, you're sleepwalking.
Yeah.
You're sleepwalking.
Right. And
I like that. So, because you do have 1 of 3 responses, and I'll say this, and then I'll go to the next call. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that sometimes when this happened to you, when it happens to you, you freeze.
Yes.
You don't move.
Yes.
Sometimes there is a flight.
Right.
You know, where that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's not always the third one, which is fight.
Right.
Right. Not everyone in that moment can fight back.
No,
sometimes you run and sometimes you just stop.
You know what? It might sound crazy, but the people that I had the most reaction from was women. Well, why didn't you fight back?
Yeah.
The men did not say that.
Sometimes
they came to
your
aid and said, what? I can't believe it. Where that brother at? I will tear him up right now. You know,
right.
You had the men that came, but the women was like, well, why didn't you do, what did you have on? I was like, what?
As if your clothes matter.
Yes.
But, you know, but it's the way we also slut shame one another.
Yes.
Right? Let's be clear. Thank
you
so much, Diane.
Welcome.
I appreciate that. I have Gloria on the phone from Baltimore. Gloria, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I called because we have 5 generations in which every woman with one exception was raped.
Five generations of women that were raped in your family, Gloria?
My mother was raped and she would not tell us how, what happened. I was raped at age 11 on my way home from church. The car stopped. I was a knife. And I didn't even know where babies came from until I was 14, so I didn't even know what happened. I just knew it was wrong. My sister by a cousin, my other sister by a night out in New York, my daughter by a college friend of mine, raped both of them at age 11.
Wow.
My niece is age 3, and the babysitter's grandson was a known pedophile who penetrated those children.
Wow.
And another niece's boyfriend, and then my granddaughter told me she had been molested. So we have 5 generations.
So 5 generations where rape has gone through your family.
You can imagine But I went to law school in Indiana, and I took a course, Women and the Law. And we had a survey on molestation. Indiana's predominantly white school. My dad was one of two, maybe two African Americans in the class. 75% of the class, male and female, had been molested.
Wow.
So it's so much more prevalent.
It is.
Than we think.
Yeah.
And then when I finally went to the police about my daughter, he's a doctor, so of course they're going to dismiss those charges. And my daughters have the trappings of success. One toured at Harvard, the other was offered a federal clerkship to the circuit court judge who pursued her about it. They succeeded, but they didn't survive.
Mm. Wow.
And then they did. I'm 73.
Wow.
And that rape is as fixed in my mind today as it was when I was 11.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this. Well, first, I want to say thank you for calling and sharing such a painful story. How have you managed to move on? Like, how do you cope with this? I mean, this to have the stain and also the weight of so many generations of women in your family, your daughter, your grandniece, the grandbaby, all included, mm-hmm. to have been raped. What are some of the things that you do to kind of cope with this and go forward?
That's a hard question. I don't know. I don't know that any of us could survive.
Wow.
Because I know I have great difficulty with intimacy and developing a trusting relationship.
Right.
And I see that in women in my family. They're not quite what this society would consider successful, but they're generally women operating alone.
Wow. Gloria, thank you so much for calling. What a painful story. Folks, we're talking about Judge Brett Kavanaugh. A woman has come forward. Dr. Ford has come forward to say that he sexually assaulted her and attempted to rape her back in the 1980s. And people want to discount this. But if you look at the stories, for someone on the receiving end of rape and sexual harassment and assault, it doesn't fade. And so should there be a time limit? Or let's take them all down. I don't know. 410-319-8888. When I come back, this is we're going to get Kenneth and Adam and Jeff, and then we're going to keep a line open for you. 410-319-8888. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise-Y here. We're talking about Judge Brett Kavanaugh, but we truly are getting into a story about one of the ways in which our society supports and maintains a culture of toxic masculinity, which results in the sexual harassment and sexual assault of both women and men. I went back to Anita Hill because the way that Anita Hill was treated when she came forward was in so many ways a national disgrace. It was a slap in the face to every woman who had ever been abused or assaulted. And it essentially told us, shut your mouth because you won't be believed. It's now hashtag Me Too. And women and men and girls and boys are fighting to be believed. We have Elizabeth Gray. She chimed in from Facebook Live. She said, I'm 41. I was assaulted by an ex-brother-in-law while I was between the ages of 11 to 14. It was a white male who also raped my younger sister when she was 11. No one would listen to us. It took a lot of therapy to be okay. He served 6 years in prison. 6 years for stealing innocence. She says not many can heal. It still brings me to tears to speak of what he did to us. She's 41. It happened to her when she was around the ages of 11 or 12 or so. Folks, maybe there shouldn't be an expiration date, because for the pain and the sorrow and the feelings of neglect and abuse that grow up in women and men who have been assaulted, it never ends. That's what we're talking about. 410-319-8888. We have Kenneth on the phone from Pikesville. Kenneth, how are you?
Fine, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
One of the topics that I think one of the things you said was about the toxicity of this male testosterone behavior, testosterone-filled behavior. One of the things that I noticed, I come from a long line of very sharp, very educated, not very educated, but very smart guys, very good-looking dudes who had a lot of girlfriends. So for the us younger guys, we were taught to divide and conquer. Mm. And when you get to be a married man and you have daughters,
right,
you don't realize until you have daughters that how wrong that behavior is.
Yeah.
Because entering in corporate America, go to work in suits every day and smelling good, hair cut, you think you can say anything you want. Hey, babe, how you doing? Wrong.
Mm.
And I think that one of the things that men have done and have learned at when they turn 54, 55 like I am,
right,
it isn't until you have a wife or you have a daughter that you now have to protect that you realize, wow,
right,
that was some wrong behavior. And there shouldn't be an expiration date.
Right, there shouldn't. I agree
there
with
should
you.
Not.
No.
I think with this confirmation, if they let this man become
A Supreme Court judge,
the top of the food chain in terms of making decisions.
A job for the rest of his life, right, Kenneth?
Exactly. We are in big trouble.
We are.
And I have three daughters. I have a 21-year-old, and I have a set of 12-year-old twins. I have a wife who's very strong, and she don't play, but it's my girls I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
Because they can take all the information that we give them as they leave the house. That's why they see me rub and kiss and talk to mommy crazy. And they go, ew, daddy, don't do that. And they see me loving mommy and kissing mommy. Because I want them to get out there, and the very first guy that puts his hands on her the wrong way, it clicks something. And says, that one, not, my daddy didn't do that to my mommy. Why are you doing that to me? Get off me.
Right.
Let me tell my daddy. But they should tell their mommy first. So the mommy can deliver the information to me. Because if they tell me first.
I can understand that.
There's going to be
I can understand that.
There's going to be some issues.
I appreciate you calling, Kenneth. Thank you so much. Folks, one of the things that Kenneth said that I just want to just kind of put on the table, you know, he said that growing up, he saw one type of behavior in his older brothers and older cousins, good-looking men, but that it was not until he got married and had daughters that he realized that that behavior was actually not correct. How do we raise our boys where they don't have to get married and have daughters before they realize that the harassing of women and girls is wrong? Like, how do we cut this snake off at the head? We have Adam on the phone. He's a new caller calling from Baltimore, but he lives in Hawaii. Welcome to the family, Adam.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well.
So, you know, I'm glad Kenneth kind of, some of the things that he touched on is setting the example for his kids. You know, I have four boys and a daughter, and I heard, you know, what you were saying earlier about, you know, the quick shift from, you know, your cultural experience to the one that affects everybody immediately right now is this Me Too movement. And I've had those same conversations. I got boys from 20 to 3, and obviously the 3-year-old, we're not having that conversation yet. But as soon as I can, I've had it with my 10-year-old, my 12-year-old. I remember, you know, kind of, I could unpack a lot of things here, but I had a an assault. I was assaulted whenever I was 5 by a boy about, he's about 5 or 6 years older than me. And it affected that, you know, and then a lot of things that we, I was watching 16 Candles the other day with my wife. And one of the scenes is where the cool, good-looking guy, Jake, was telling the nerdy kid, he said, hey, my girlfriend's asleep. I could have her any way I want her.
Wow.
Go back and watch the movie. Go back and watch it. Some 16 Candles, a movie that we want all of our kids to watch.
Everybody watches that.
And that's the message. I've watched that movie 100 times.
Wow.
I never caught on to that until it was like about a month ago, and I thought, holy crap, that's what was even as subtle as it is.
Right.
That's what we were fed. There's a whole list of things. You know, pornography was just as available whenever I was a kid as it was whenever the internet came out. It was just in the form of your big brothers or cousins or somebody's stash that they had in their bedroom.
Yep, underneath the mattress or something.
Yeah, I heard about that. Absolutely. But it was kind of a rite of passage back then.
Right.
Now it's an epidemic. But
yeah, it is.
But going back to that example, I like what Kenneth said. I try to show, I'm improving to show a better example to my 3-year-old than I did to my older kids from my previous marriage.
Right.
One of the things that was, my wife got on to me, I patted her on the fanny one day walking through the kitchen. And she said, hey, she said, our son, she goes, you know, our son patted me on the hiney the other day.
Wow, because he saw you
and
do
thought,
it and thought it was okay.
Yeah. You know, and I thought he wasn't watching.
Yeah, they always are.
Yo, they always are. I want to kind of bring this back to the original part of that conversation, the Me Too and the talking about
it.
When I told my parents for the first time, I think I was in the Marine Corps at the time, or I was getting ready to go in the Marines. I told them I'd been sexually assaulted by this guy, and I had seen him. He was in the Army. He was an officer in the Army, and he was a chaplain, or getting ready to go into the chaplain service, and it wasn't too many years. I could have mopped the parking lot with this guy several times over had I wanted to. I thought about it. But it wasn't until after I had somebody talk to me about, getting it out and talking. I contacted him on Facebook.
Right.
And I confronted him. And he initially denied it.
And then he finally admitted it?
Well, he did after I took a hard line with him and said, look, something happened. You need to own up to it because I'm prepared to go after you.
Now, did that make you feel better when he admitted it, Adam?
It did. It did, and he remembered it a little
differently.
That was
kind of a closing for you, some healing there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. So, when I first heard about the accusations against, Mr. Kavanaugh, and I was a little upset with him when he turned his hand to the, turned his back to the Parkland shooter survivor. Or to the victim's dad.
Right.
I thought, man, what are we doing here? That have been wrong.
Now, I'm going to have to stop you there, Adam. I'm so sorry. Thank you for calling. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you telling your story. Also about that piece about you getting healing by confronting the person who assaulted you. We have Lisa on the phone. She's a new caller from Baltimore. Lisa, welcome to the family.
Thank you, Dr. K. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for calling.
So, This touches home for me. Like, I was a victim, I believe, at the age of 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Mom's boyfriend. And it wasn't until I was about 15 years old when I had the nerve to tell my mother.
Mm.
And she didn't believe me. She told me to go back to bed.
Mm.
It hurt my soul that was her only response, just go back to bed. And I winded up having to live in the house with the person that assaulted me.
With your abuser. Wow.
Even after I told my mother for at least another year and a half, that really messed me up. And Just to say, it was many years after that. I've been in and out of dysfunctional relationships, marriages, in and out of. I've been married like 3 times. Nothing just never felt right with a man. Nothing has ever felt right. I've never trusted. But to just bring it back, we talk about, is it too late? Is it too late to bring them to justice? I got enough healing to be able to say, you know what, this is what's happened to me. It wasn't my fault, but I was well into my 40s at that time, And then the person that violated me was dead.
Hmm.
So
nobody to confront.
Nobody to confront.
Except maybe your mother. Nobody. That would be something. I don't know if your mother's
still living.
My mother
has since died as well.
Okay.
So not even to be able to say, look,
yeah,
this is what happened. Whether you believe me or not, you know, he knows this is what happened. Whether he acknowledges it or not, this is what has happened to me. So, you know, I like the lady that called earlier and said that, you know, sometimes you just have to write the note.
Burn it, or just holler out loud. I like that.
Yes, holler out loud.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for calling. We're definitely standing with you, sister. We have Jeff on the phone from Maryland. Jeff, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. I'm fine.
Thank you for calling.
It's kind of painful to be hearing all these stories. I really sympathize with all these victims that are calling in, but. Lust is a powerful thing, you know, along with greed, the top two.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as far as the youth right now, they're being infected with all this free pornography and the element of courtship's being taken out of the whole romantic, you know, way of doing things that probably you and I, you know, came up knowing,
right.
You know, courtship, you know, light petting, whatever. That's gone away.
Yeah, they go from 0 to 60 very quickly now.
It's just violent. It's violent sex. I mean, that's what they're viewing. They think that that's the way. The whole element of treating a woman the way she's supposed to be treated is removed, and it's a problem.
And it's very concerning.
Because
how do we help them to, I mean, when I say how to help them normalize, how do we help them to remove the violence, you know, the casualness of it, because that's what they're seeing.
Yeah, we can't depend on, you know, officials, because they're the kingpins when it comes to this. I've done work on buildings in Northern Virginia only to find out that the complexes I'm working on are the residents are prostitutes from like Ukraine and stuff like that,
right,
that are brought over
we call them, those are sex slaves. If you're brought over from another country, I mean, you know, because prostitution involves a certain amount of, you know, control, right? But you are a sex slave. If you're bought from another country, hell somewhere, you are a sex slave.
Well, these were, I mean, these women seemed pretty willing, although, you know, you're right. But
these were
high dollar prostitutes. And when I inquired about, like, you know, something strange is here, they told me they were kept here because of the politicians in D.C.
Oh, my word.
That they were there for the politicians, you know.
Okay,
when they go on their, and that just opened my eyes. This is about 10 years ago I found out about this. And it really opened my eyes politically to how sick politicians can be with that, you know. And it's been going on for a long time.
And we've got to find a way to stop it.
It's the big one.
We have to.
And someone has to be a victim, and it's so sad.
Thank you so much for calling, Jeff. I appreciate that. I just want to say one thing. You know, when we start talking about lust, because Jeff used the term lust, folks, let's be very clear. Sexual harassment and sexual assault, it's about power. Rape is about power. Exercising your power and your will over someone else. An adult sexually assaulting a child, that's not about lust. That's about power. That's about control. That is a sickness. When a man assaults a woman and her no does not resonate with him, when a woman assaults a man, I mean, we can keep going, and the word no does not resonate, you don't keep going because of lust. That's not why you keep going. Like, let's be very, very clear. We have Stephen on the phone from Woodlawn. Stephen, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. I'm good. Another great show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say a couple things. One is that Kamala Harris submitted some written questions to Judge Kavanaugh regarding his relationship with former Judge Alex Kozinski, who retired from the bench after, I think, 30 years on the bench because of sexual harassment allegations that he received.
So
Kavanaugh was an intern for him. So it's pervasive throughout the legal profession as well.
Yes,
the legal profession from, you know, Clarence Thomas throughout.
Come on.
Is where the issue needs to be addressed initially right now. because the bar in the bar, I would say the Maryland bar, and various bar associations around the country need to address what it is that they're allowing in their profession as an ethical standard. It's become an ethical standard for them to allow this. And so they need, that needs to be addressed. The second thing is that the power that we're talking about, a lot of it is revolved around entitlement. And people feel entitled to the bodies that are in front of them, the people who are subject to them, or employees of theirs, or even coworkers of theirs. They feel entitled to these bodies, whether it's an adult that feels entitled to a child's body. And it plays on our the lustful images that we receive, right, playing into that entitlement and engage our want for power. And I think one of the main ways that I've been able to look into my own feelings of entitlement and lust and whatnot have been through reading and experiencing, not just listening to my friends, my women friends' experiences, who have been, because everyone knows someone, right, but also reading.
We all
about
know somebody.
Yes, and reading about the experiences of women. I think the Chickenhead's Guide to Hip Hop that Joan Morgan wrote.
Yes, it talks about what was happening in that field.
When I read that, it opened my eyes to what was going on in the culture that I was engaged in, related to how women were being demeaned.
The misogynistic rap lyrics. Thank you so much, Stephen. Oh, my word, folks. I mean, for those of us who grew up in rap, talking about teaching and spoon-feeding misogyny and disrespect, and what Stephen just said so eloquently, the entitlement. Angela Davis said that during a period of American enslavement, that white men got this belief that they had uncontested access to the black woman's body. And since then, they have continued to believe that they have uncontested access to the black woman's body. And then they've led this kind of teaching around all men who sometimes believe that they have uncontested access to any woman's body. I want to rub close against you. I want to have sex with you. I've told you that. What's the problem? What's holding you up? That's toxic masculinity. That's what we have to unroot. We have Patricia on the phone. She's a new caller from Baltimore. Patricia, welcome to the family.
Hi. Thanks, Dr. K, for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to share some information, too, that happened with me as well. I was just listening to some of the callers, and I'm 61, and I was molested at age 11 by my mother's boyfriend. And, you know, it's interesting because I was in a cycle with that relationship for like 4 years before I told my first boyfriend. I was able to tell him. I couldn't tell my mother. I just could not do it. I told my first boyfriend, and he actually was the only one that was able to break that cycle, because he threatened the guy, and that kind of like dissipated.
Wait, so it was, you started when you were 11, so it went on for 4 years. So he must have been, what, 15, 16 years old as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And when I told him, he confronted him and said, you know, and so he at least, I felt like someone listened and someone took charge of that, because I just didn't know what to do at that time, you know. And I did not tell my mother for 30 years, because I just didn't know how she would react. I was afraid. I just thought the same situations that a lot of the other women were feeling, that they, you know, they did something wrong. They caused it. They were responsible. And so it just, I did not say anything. Now that he's dead, but when I told my mother, she was very upset. And she said, I wish you had told me sooner. Wow. You know, so she at least acknowledged that it did happen.
Right.
You know, so I felt like that was, you know, I felt better about that. But, you know, it's still haunts me to this day. I'll never forget it, and his impact in my life. I mean, I've been married. I was seeing another lady who was just talking about the fact that she'd been married 3 times, and you know, her relationships, you know, really does have an impact on you. You know, after many years, you know, you may not necessarily, it may be unconscious to an extent,
but it's there.
It is the only
thing. It
is there. You know, and it affects your life for the rest of your life. So, in thinking about that, I think that whoever, when this happens to women, it doesn't matter how old they are or how long it's been. I think that person needs to be held accountable.
Yep.
You know, especially if they're in positions of power or to be in positions of power.
Yeah. To be a Supreme Court justice. No, hold them accountable. I'm right with you. Thank you, Patricia. Folks, I'm saying we need to stand tall, and this is not to put the pressure on anyone who's been assaulted or harassed. I am not taking that position.
Right. Right.
But there's something about being able to stand in your power and speak your truth.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
So much.
We have Steve on the phone from the Inner Harbor. Steve, how are you? And welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you doing, Kate?
I'm doing well.
I remember the hearing, and matter of fact, it was televised just like the old trial. It was on regular television.
It was on late night television. It was like afternoon. It came on like 6, 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, and that's just the thing about it. Anita Hill was a very intelligent woman.
Yes.
She was like a college professor.
Yeah, she is.
And
she wasn't flashy,
so she got on TV or before the Senate lying about what Clarence Thomas did. And another thing Clarence Thomas did that was real slick was that he invoked the Black Man's Clause
and said that this was a high-tech lynching.
Oh. He never was black after that.
Come on.
Think about that.
Come on. Come on.
Now, he played that card. Now, as far as Kavanaugh is concerned, even though, like, people are saying something about the statute of limitations, when he was 17, I was 17 once, too, and I drank. But, I mean, I never did anything like that, you know? We went to parties. We went down in the cellar. We danced with the girls. But, like you were saying about the rap music and about the difference in the culture, we were more respectful, we were more courteous, and we weren't aggressive to the point where I have to impose my will on you, irregardless of whether you say yes or no. It's like, it's about me and about what I want and the help with what you say. It's never, I was never taught that way.
Right.
And so I have a different perspective on, you know, how to go about, you know, the courtship and all. Somebody had brought that up earlier.
Right.
About the respectful way in which, you know, couples were.
Right. That you court now, someone, right? You court them.
Right. And on the other side of it, I had a female family member stay with me recently for 4 months, and I was shocked that her mentality, she was like, yeah, I went and I met this guy, and we went to bed, and I kept telling her that she needs to just slow down. And every time that I would tell her about slowing down, but what happened is that something would happen traumatic between her and the young man. It's because she was not taking her time, and she was putting herself out a certain way. And so, what she was really looking for wasn't being reciprocated.
Okay.
And it was boomerang back on her in negativity. And
right.
She also said that she was going to try to wear some provocative outfits.
Okay, so we were going,
because she wanted to show her body. So this is all tied
okay.
in.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you calling. So, folks, I am of the belief, and this is just I stand firm and say that what I am wearing does not give you the permission to assault me. I'm sorry. If my skirt has you that twisted up, if the fact that you can see my bra has your mind all turned around, well, you're thinking my only response is I'm going to have to attack that woman because I can see, you know, the top of her thigh, then the sin is not with her. It's with you, folks. I'm not going to start clothes shaming people. Men, learn how to control yourself. Raise your boys not to see women as something they can assault and abuse, and women can wear whatever they want to wear. We don't have to see it as something, oh, she's trying to entice me. She may not even be thinking about you. She is making choices where she should be able to wear whatever she wants to wear. We have Shabazz on the phone from Gwin Oaks. Shabazz, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
I am the one that you talked to Friday about the Deuteronomy, but we're not talking about that.
Yeah, you have to call me back on Deuteronomy. I know we're out of time today, but I went and read it. So we got to talk about it.
I'm going to thank you mentioning Angela Davis.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to take this. This is the sickness of the leadership of this country.
Yes.
When the English came here, they did it to the Indians. Then, like Ann, they raped the women, the Indian women. Then, and like you say, Angela Davis said during slavery.
Yes.
It was done during slavery. Then you got Hustler. You got Playboy. You got all of these magazines produced by white men. Right. We're living under the mind of their sick mindset. And everything we're doing as men, we learn from them.
Yes, I'm
telling you about this before.
Yep.
The women suffer because what we've learned from our oppressor.
Yes.
Now I'm at learning his ways.
Now I understand. I'm at to stop you there, and I'm so sorry, Paul and Leo Burris. I couldn't get to you today. I mean, the phones are just ringing, folks. I just want to say that I appreciate people calling and sharing their stories, their survival stories. I want every single listener to understand that you are not alone. We here at the Today with Dr. K show, I'm speaking for myself and for Justina Pollard and for Deja, we are here for you. We hear you. We are listening to you because this has your ear and it definitely has our attention. We want to lean forward with you and imagine a world where women are not being assaulted. Boys are not being assaulted. Girls and men are not being assaulted. Where sexual harassment is a thing of the past. We will keep saying hashtag Me Too until every woman who has been assaulted, every man, every child who's been assaulted can stand up and speak their truth, because that's how we begin to heal. Stay tuned, because up next is For the Culture with Faraji. Folks, we'll meet you back here tomorrow at 3. We're going to talk again, and we're also going to look into having a counselor on the show to follow up on some of the things that came out today. So keep it right here on WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. And here comes a quick and final update from MTA.